Techonomics on KGO A10. The chatter about drones has mostly been about flying machines. But what about drones that are more like submarines? On this edition of Techonomics, host Jason Middleton talks with the founder of a Berkeley, California company who is making underwater drones for the masses. Citizen science goes below the waterline, starting now.
Hi, welcome back. Since 1969, we have sent 12 people to the moon over a handful of missions. Now contrast that with only 3 people who have descended to the deepest part of the ocean in the Marianas Trench. And, important to note for this story, one of those people was filmmaker James Cameron, who spent $10 million of his own money to finance that craft. Here's another whopper. The ocean covers 71% of Earth. Yet a whopping 95% of that ocean is completely unexplored. A fledgling Berkeley company, OpenROV, wants to flip that script.
Sure. I'm Eric Stackpole, and I'm co-founder of OpenROV.
Eric, thank you for coming in, and thanks for hauling in your drone. I think we should start with an auditory description, and then we'll put some pictures up on the blog, right? But can you tell us what it looks like and how you got to this design?
Sure, yeah. All right, well, I'm holding it now, and it's about the size of a briefcase. Trident is this really sleek-looking hydrodynamic vehicle, and it's called an ROV, which stands for Remotely Operated Vehicle. It has a camera in the front, and that's an HD camera behind a sapphire window that allows it to look underwater. And on either side of the camera are these lights, in the back of the vehicle, rather, are these two horizontal thrusters, these propellers that move it through the water. And if they go in opposite directions, they cause it to turn. And then on top, there's a propeller that moves it up and down through the water. It's black and white. It's mostly white with kind of these black rubbery bumpers.
Yeah, they look like racing stripes.
Yeah, they look like racing stripes. They do make it go faster.
That's cool.
But they're also bumpers. So if you run into something, you know, they should help pad that. We've built this to be extremely durable. Unlike if you look up pictures of other ROVs out there, they usually have all these appendages that can break off and get snagged. You know, this is very streamlined. We've designed it to be extremely rugged and extremely sleek.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it very efficient in the water and very durable, but it also makes it able to go really fast. This can travel at 2 meters per second. That's the speed of Michael Phelps in the Olympics.
Wow.
So the speed is great, but what that really translates into is being able to penetrate through current. You know, we've used it in San Francisco Bay, which, mm-hmm. which I can talk about later. And it also allows you to, you know, explore places like rivers and places where there's a lot of current and it'd be hard to fly other vehicles there.
Okay. And I have to say, Eric, when you pulled it out of its protective case, I thought, you know, if I stacked up 3 of my 15-inch MacBook Pros, I'd have about the same size and about almost the same weight.
You have to weigh the exact same amount as the amount of water you're moving out of the way. And that makes it neutrally buoyant. So if you put this in the water and you put it a little bit below the surface, it won't sink or float. It'll just stay where you put it. It's just like hair or something like that. It stays right where you put it in the water. And that's really important if you want to examine an area, you know, hovering right over the bottom. You can turn all the thrusters off and it just stays put. Also, that small size makes it really portable. You know, that's one of the big challenges with exploration is getting there. You hear about all these expeditions that are, you know, really expensive just because they need to get to that location. This can fit in the backpack, you know, with the tether, with the control console, which is just a laptop computer or a tablet or a phone.
We will have pictures on Facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. Okay, so that's the look and the feel. Let's get into the data. This little machine collects a hell of a lot of data. So let's talk about how you collect and what you're looking for.
Well, the main payload on Trident is its camera. You know, what most people we think are going to be wanting to do is just look around and see things that no one's seen before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the vehicle can go to 100-meter depth. That's 4 or 5 times deeper than most scuba divers will ever go. You're seeing parts of the world that no one has ever seen before. So if you can make fundamental new discoveries, you know, most of that's going to be visual.
Right.
We also have a depth sensor on board. We can see our depth. There's all sorts of telemetry about temperature. We have onboard lights so we can see in the dark, which you need at that depth.
Sure.
And a bunch of other kind of internal, you know, battery voltage, current, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Also on the bottom, you can kind of see here, I'll have to describe it for listeners, but there are these holes in kind of a grid pattern. They're 50 millimeter spaced M3 holes, and that's for attaching payloads. So you could attach a robot arm or a water sensor or, you know, any sort of payload that you might want. A lot of professional photographers want to use external lights so they can get the lighting just right.
I see. And you said payload there, and it made me think of payoff too, because I'm not a millionaire and I want to go underwater and I don't have to be a millionaire now, basically, right?
Yeah. And that kind of starts attaching to the bigger picture of what we're trying to do. These cost $1,500. So that's the same cost as a nice laptop. And it's an order of magnitude lower cost than any of the other vehicles that have really been out there,
wow.
You know, that are like it. So, you know, we're hoping that this is going to be a thing that can democratize exploration, put these in the hands of regular people. You don't have to be a big institution to be fundamentally making new discoveries.
What's the delivery method for the Trident?
That's a great question. And actually, that has a lot to do with our history, too. We've been around for about half a decade. Oh, wow, that sounds like a long time. 5 years. And we started out by selling kits. And there was a big barrier to entry. These kits, you put them together. You know, I like to say if you're an adult, it'll take 2 weeks. If you're a kid, maybe 1 week.
Right.
But you assemble these kits and then you have this ROV that you can fly around. We realized that a lot of people who want to explore don't want to build a kit. It's they don't have the time or they're a little bit intimidated by the process. Mm-hmm. So this one's ready to go out of the box. You know, it should be ready to fly, as we say. It comes just like you see it. There's a little topside adapter, which goes on the other end of the tether, and that you can connect to wirelessly. Once you're flying it, it's pretty much like playing a video game. It's really straightforward. I should also mention the whole thing is attached to the topside adapter, the thing that you log into with your computer with a tether. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people ask why we have a tether. You know, all these drones are wireless. And the reason is because radio waves don't travel through water. You cannot, because of physics, send live video wirelessly through the water. There's no way to do it.
These laws of the universe are getting in our way of having to be tethered. Let's go back in the Wayback Machine, 5 years.
Okay.
So this is kind of where Eric and I go off the rails. I ask him about the real origin story of the Trident underwater drone, and he jumps in his Wayback Time Machine to the San Francisco Gold Rush of 1849. And I'm not kidding. His underwater startup company, Open ROV, and the Trident drone stems from a legend of stolen gold that is lost in the Bay Area hills.
You know, so they decide to ditch the gold to try to get away, right? They can't run fast enough with it. Posse catches up with them anyway sometime later and says, "Tell us where you hid this gold and we'll spare your lives." And they said they hid it in a cave, and they described where the cave was. And despite the Posse's promise, both men were hung on the spot. It's the Wild West.
Okay, so the story goes that the trunk of gold was put in a water hole inside of a limestone cave, only the water hole inside that cave is a natural anomaly carved out over eons. It's basically a natural well, narrow and incredibly deep. Naturally, the gold must be someplace almost impossible to reach, right? I mean, this is a legend. We'll need a technological breakthrough.
So we walk in, and sure enough, this is this cave, and we're following in. This is three of us. And we kind of see this little creek, make a right turn in the cave, and then there it is, this water-filled pool. And we were there for like 10 or 20 minutes shining our flashlights around, and only when you shine your light at the exact right angle did we find right below the surface, sort of hidden by the sheen of the surface of the water, there it was, this perfectly circular 6-foot diameter hole going straight down into the ground.
Okay, from that point, Eric wanted to know what was at the bottom of that water-filled hole, besides legends of lost gold. Okay, now, let's get back to our chat. Let's talk about other use cases for the Trident, okay?
Yeah, sure.
Because I know that you mentioned you've been exploring in the bay. Mm-hmm. What are you looking for in the bay? Just to get around, check it out?
I do love the idea of just kind of poking around. You never know what you're going to find. But there are some stories that have really been compelling to me over the years. One that I read about that was really interesting is the story of the SS San Rafael, the steamer San Rafael.
Oh, yes.
This is a steamship that was built in the 1800s and sank in 1901 after colliding with another steamship right off of Alcatraz. It was a dead fog on a Sunday night. And basically, the two ships were going very slowly, but they didn't see each other. And one of them, the San Rafael, got hit broadside and sunk over the course of about 20 minutes. Most of the passengers made it off. A few did die. Mm. They say probably around 5 people died. The ship sank and no one's seen it yet. There's a almost 200 foot long steamship right off of Alcatraz and no one's seen it since 1901.
Uh-huh.
And it's a really interesting story. I mean, the researching this was a really interesting project in itself. You know, you think that you can look everything up online, and I had this revelation that may be a revelation for other people in my generation. I'm joking a little bit, but it turns out that not all information that exists is on the internet.
Not yet. But yeah, you're right. There's a gap. There's a knowledge gap.
So I was going to the Marin Historical Society and looking at all these old original newspapers from 1901. And, you know, the way they're describing this is that, you know, it was kind of like the Titanic of that era for San Francisco. You know, they're describing when the ship that everyone went on to as the other one was sinking, as it came back into port in San Francisco, the way they described it was like, you know, people had, you know, broken limbs that were gushing out blood, and children were not able to find their parents. Women were leaving the ship without their hats.
Oh my gosh. It was just tragedy.
Yeah.
Mayhem.
And, you know, and there was a horse that lived aboard the ship, and they couldn't get the horse to go across the planks.
Wow.
And so they thought it went down with the ship, but they later found it on Baker Beach. I mean, it's just this crazy story that's kind of got lost in time, because just a few years later, the 1906 earthquake happened.
Right. Yeah.
So we wanted to go find this ship, and we had a rough idea where it was. We looked at all these accounts, you know, sometimes handwritten accounts from people who were on board when it happened. We went out onto the bay to try to find it. We've actually gone a few times now, and it's really hard to find because the bay has shifted so much since then. There have been dredging operations and all that. But we have found a few objects that seem like they could be it with a side scan sonar, and we're waiting to verify those with the vehicle.
Yeah, it'd be fun when you find it, but the search also sounds pretty compelling as well.
Exactly. You know, in the movie industry, they call this the MacGuffin. You know, you go out, you have this excuse, you know, oh, what's in the box? And that's the whole rest of the movie. And by the end, you forget that they're even looking for a box.
Right.
There's reported to be something on the order of 200 shipwrecks in San Francisco Bay alone, you know, and we've yet to even look at any of them specifically, but almost every dive we go on, we find something else that was interesting. You know, you kind of picture that once something's below the surface, it just ceases to exist. But, you know, picture the side of the freeway and you see all this trash on the side of the freeway. Now picture boats over the last 200 years actively coming in and out of San Francisco Bay, dropping things overboard, and they're heavy and they're metal and they're, you know, it's interesting, and it's like a desert floor there. They're just sitting there, and no one's going to disturb them unless they have the tools.
You have a piece of hardware that has a lot of scientific capability. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it looks pretty fun. So when you go out with your team, do you guys have to thumb wrestle over who gets to drive?
We do. I mean, that's a great thing of co-founding the company. I feel like I have a little more clout. No, we certainly have a lot of people who really love just doing this.
That was Eric Stackpole, co-founder of underwater drone company Open ROV. We have links to Open ROV and other resources at kgoradio.com/techonomics and at facebook.com/techonomicsradio. We have video links of the Trident underwater drone in action. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.